It's so good to be with you as always. So good to have so many of you joining us in person and those of you joining us online from all over the place. It's great to have you with us today. And last week was a fantastic weekend here at OCC. Over 30 baptisms, 30 people giving their life to Jesus. Yeah, that's great. And man, it was such a great weekend for me. I had so much fun getting to know people in the baptistry and getting to see some people who've been here for a while making that decision. But because I was in the water last week, I wasn't able to be out in the lobby and meet some of you. So for those of you who are new or newer to us, and maybe you were new last week on Easter and you came back and joined us this week, we are so proud of you for showing back up, right? If you remember what Thomas did, he showed back up and we're glad you're here. And I would love the opportunity to meet you. I'll be in the lobby by the stone wall, which is right through these center doors. There's a stone wall looking straight ahead that way. That's where I'll be kind of camped out after service. And I would love the opportunity to meet you if we have not already met yet, just to get a chance to learn your name and to meet you in person. So I hope that you will stop by and see me there after service. Well, today we begin a new series called Did You Hear? And over the next several weeks, we'll be looking at a portion of Jesus' Sermon on the Mount, where during this portion of a sermon, Jesus six different times used the phrase, "You've heard it said," and then he went on to quote a popular religious teaching. And each time after doing so, Jesus said, "You've heard it said," and he gave the teaching, and then he would say, "But I tell you," and then he would offer clarification and commentary on those popular teachings. And with each one, Jesus takes us beyond the behavior and gets at the heart level. He cuts to the heart and raises the bar for all of us. And I just imagine that after this sermon, the Sermon on the Mount, and especially after this portion of the sermon, people would walk away and they would definitely be talking to one another. They'd be looking at each other saying, "Hey, did you hear that? Did you hear what Jesus said? Did you hear how he challenged the religious authorities? Did you hear what he said about those things we've always heard and always believed? Did you hear how he spoke with authority, but he also spoke with such compassion? Did you hear what he said? And if you did hear, do you understand what that means for us? Do you understand what this means now? Did you hear it?" Well, the next couple weeks in this series, we'll be getting to some things, taking a look at some things we may have all heard about some topics that are a little more mature. Not this week, but next week and the week after, we'll be dealing with some topics that Jesus deals with that are more of a PG-13 nature. Now, we're not saying it's PG-13 because we plan to be crass or irreverent with that. It's just the content matter lends itself to a more mature audience. So if you are a parent or a guardian and you usually have your younger kids with you in service, that would be a fantastic time to utilize our children's programming. Not that you shouldn't have those conversations with your kids, but the way that we're going to tackle all the topics in this series is such that we hope to equip you to be able to have those conversations with your kids in the right way, in the way that you deem best for them. So just want to give you a heads up, next week, the week after, the content is going to be a little more mature. But we're not there yet, so let's jump into what Jesus said first. Jesus begins this section by saying, "You've heard it said," or "You've heard that it was said to the people long ago, you should not murder. And anyone who murders will be subject to judgment. But I tell you that anyone who is even angry with a brother or sister," now he's talking brother or sister in the faith, he says anyone who's even angry with a brother or sister will be subject to judgment. He goes on, he says, "Again, anyone who says to a brother or a sister, rakah, is answerable to the court. And anyone who says, you fool, will be in danger of the fire of hell." Now, this statement, rakah and you fool, in that cultural language, we can maybe translate this a little bit better into the English. These are statements of calling somebody a moron, an idiot, that it's they have an empty character and an empty head. Now, I don't know about you, but that sounds to me like a first grader on the playground kind of comment, like, "You empty head." But the reality here is this is a dig on another person, and it's spoken out of anger to discredit the person and to belittle and degrade them. These are demeaning statements. And Jesus says that's never okay. And that gets you in danger of the fire of hell. Now, friend, Jesus talks about anger here, and I'm just curious what you have heard about anger. Well, what have you heard about anger? Maybe you've heard it said that Christians should not get angry, that a good Christian won't be mad, won't get angry. Maybe you've heard it said that anger is bad and should always be avoided. So when you feel angry, you should just keep it bottled up inside. You should stuff it and pretend that everything is okay. Because we all know that doing that never causes any problems down the road, right? Some of you grew up in a house like that where nobody ever got angry. It wasn't okay to be angry. So you just pretended that you were okay. But you know that behind the scenes, you were smiling at each other to the face, but you were murdering one another in your hearts. Some of you, you have work environments like that. You have some friend circles like that. You might have still a home environment like that. Others of you, you grew up in a home that was more like what I grew up in. The Fitzgibbon home growing up was a place where anger was the way we handled problems. He who could yell loudest and longest would win. Well, like you'd win the argument. Like if I can out-anger you, then I'm going to win. I'm not sure what we would win. Like we might win the argument. We might win the moment. But we would always lose. We would lose respect, lose relationship. Now, there were times when it seemed legit to get angry, to get bent. My dad was a professor of mathematics and geography. He was not a mechanic, but my dad always tried to save money. So when the car needed repaired, dad would try and fix the car himself. And this was in the days before Google, before YouTube, before the internet, when you had the old book that you would flip through to try and find how to fix things. And it gave drawings and schematics. And rarely was that a pleasant experience as I was the little kid stuck handing him the tool that he was yelling for. Similarly, when dad was working on the plumbing, there was never a good reason to work on plumbing. If dad had to fix the plumbing, it's because something was broken and he was bent. And I would say some of those instances, it was legit. Like the time that our septic system, we lived out in the country and we had a septic tank. And when our septic system needed a new line dug for it, I'm just going to tell y'all, when you are standing in a poop pit with a shovel, it's legit to feel a little upset and maybe for some certain words to come out of your mouth with a certain tone. But the reality is, I'm not sure my dad really ever held a tool without yelling. And unfortunately, I inherited some of that from him. Now, I'm a DIY guy, and I love carpentry, and I love building, and I love fixing things, but I like doing it on my own terms. If I am the one who chose the project, if I'm the one who chose to build something, then I'm generally pretty happy about that. But if it's something that's been broken, and then I have to fix it, I tend to be less excited. Years ago, there was somebody had shoved some things into our garbage disposal, the house we had before this one, and it jammed up the disposal line and it broke the disposal and all that needed fixed. Now, depending on which Fitz you talk to, there may be some discrepancies in how this story goes, but I have the microphone, so I'm going to tell you the accurate telling of the story, okay? The way it really happened. Now, I'll be fair and I'll be honest. It was a beautiful day. It was a nice day, and we had people coming over to the house later, and I had to get this thing fixed. So while Jen and the kids were in the backyard playing on a beautiful day like today, I was in a very contorted manner underneath the kitchen sink inside a cabinet. And at one point, Jen came in to check on me and asked me how I was doing, and apparently she misunderstood the tone of my response and then called me out in my anger. And I simply said to her, I had some questions, said, sweetie, I don't know. I don't know if you realize how cramped I am. My body is contorted into a cabinet that is not meant for a man my size. I'm not even sure it's meant for anyone of any size. I don't know if you realize that instead of playing in the backyard on this beautiful day, I'm fixing someone else's mistake. I don't know what's going on here. I don't know if you realize that the sludge from the netherworld is dripping in my face, in my eye, into my mouth, even as we speak. I don't know if you really understand what's going on here. And at that point, Jen said, yeah, well, I don't even know if you're a Christian right now. I'm not really sure what that means, but I did pick up on the cue that maybe she had misinterpreted my tone. And I don't, it was not a great day in the Fitz home at that moment. And friend, I don't know what you've heard about anger. Maybe you've heard that you had the right to be angry, that you should get mad and you should get angered and you should stand up for yourself. And maybe you've heard that. Maybe you've heard a bunch of other things about anger. But I wonder, did you hear what Jesus said about anger? Did you catch what he said just a moment ago as we read those words from him? I mean, Jesus likens murder to anger, and he likens anger to murder. He speaks of these in the same way. He says, you've heard it said you should not murder anyone. Now, not murdering someone. Hey, can we all agree that that's like the lowest bar possible for our spiritual health? If I refrain from murdering another person because I'm upset, and that's the measure of spiritual maturity, like that just seems like a really low bar, because we would all, I think, I would hope, we would all put murder on the list of the really, 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 really bad sins, like bad things to do. But Jesus says, yeah, you've heard don't murder, but I tell you, you shouldn't even stay angry with someone. Whoa, like he just brings anger into this murder context. Like Jesus forces us to ask ourselves how our anger has impacted others. Are we murdering other people in our hearts? Are we murdering the relationship? Are we killing somebody else with our words, with our actions, with our eyes? What are we doing in this moment when we're angry? Now, let's be clear about what Jesus is saying here. But to do that, we got to be clear about what he's not saying here. Jesus does not say it's a sin to be angry. Like, feeling angry is not a sin, okay? Anger is a feeling, and that's a legitimate feeling. God gets angry, and God does not sin. So anger cannot, in and of itself, be sin. Anger is an emotion we feel. It's an emotion that rises within us. Anger itself is not sin. Several years ago, Pixar Animation Studios released their film Inside Out. It's a fantastic movie. And in that movie, it gives us a glimpse into the mind and the emotions of a young girl. And they do this by personifying the emotions. The emotions have their own personality. There's fear, disgust, joy, sadness, and anger are the emotions playing in her head. And the movie shows how these emotions compete for dominance in the human brain. It's a brilliant movie, if you've not seen it. Well, early on in the movie, the young girl's family is moving to a new city, and they get stuck in traffic. Horns are honking, cars are stopped, people are yelling, it's chaos, traffic is not going anywhere, people are yelling, chaotic scene. And then anger stands up and says, "These are my kind of people." And some of us are like, yeah, that's me, right? Because we've all been there. And not just in traffic. We've all felt anger. We've all been upset a time or two. We've all experienced anger. Sometimes we even feel like we need to release our anger, like we need to vent the anger. We need to blow off some steam, because there's always something going on that can steam our beans, right? And we feel like, oh man, I'm angered and I need to get rid of this. That's why rage rooms are all the fad in certain places. Now, just as an aside, recent research has actually shown that venting our anger, things like rage rooms and having that person you can just yell at, or that thing you do, that those things actually don't help us relieve anger. It helps us relieve a little bit of stress in the moment, but it actually conditions us to prolong the issue and hold on to the angry feelings. We justify that feeling, and it actually just keeps it there longer. The better way is what research is finding through things like prayer. And we'll talk about that more in a moment. But the reality is that anger itself is not a sin. But the problem is, when we don't process our anger, we often enter into sin. And anger itself is an emotion. It's not sin. But if we fail to process the anger, then that's when we find ourselves entering into sin. And anger itself is an indicator light on the dashboard of our souls. It tells us what's going on under the hood. If you're driving down the road and the dash lights start coming on. You see the oil light pop on your car. You're wise to pull over and check the oil. Maybe pull into a shop and see what needs to take place. You know, do you have an oil leak all of a sudden? What's going on with the engine? If the check engine light comes on, you go and you run a diagnostic test on it. You don't just keep driving. If the fuel indicator light pops on, you know you got to go get gas. These are indicators that something else is going on under the hood. If you have one of those newer cars, maybe a little bit fancier, and it tells you about the air pressure in your tires, and you get the sensor that tells you you got a tire that's low. You go, you get it checked out. You put some more air in the tire. You don't just put tape over it and keep driving. Now, some of you might. I would suggest that's not wise. Because when you do that, eventually you create more problems. You do damage to the engine, to the car. And depending on what the issue is, you may even do damage to yourself and others. Anger is the same way. Anger is simply an indicator light on the dashboard. It tells us that something's going on under the hood, that we need to check what's going on. Anger tells us that there's something else that's happening, and we need to get it checked out. So when the anger indicator light comes on, it's wise to hit pause and to process what's happening. Maybe to see a Christian counselor, and if you need to, we can recommend some for you. Maybe to speak with one of the ministers here on staff. Maybe talk to your small group leader. Allow them to do some soul inspection for you to help you. But don't just pretend that everything's okay. See, anger is always a secondary emotion. It's always pointing to another emotion that we're feeling. It's always pointing to something else. And we know this, right? We even joke about this. This is why we have terms like hangry, hungry anger. If you ride with the Fitz fam on a road trip, you know that we make it a priority to stop for food at certain times, because if something happens and we miss a food stop, the further we go, the longer we go after we've missed that food stop, we know the snarkier and snippier the family's going to be, and that is just not good for anybody. I mean, we can wreck a vacation within the first 5 hours if we miss a meal. So we don't want to do that. And anyone who's ever been around a toddler, like, you know how far a simple snack can go at mealtime to prevent a Chernobyl-like meltdown in the home, right? Yeah, I'm seeing the heads nod. Y'all know. Like, this is why you leave your kids over in kids programming today, right? Like, oh, we come to adult service and breathe. Oh, yeah. Maybe you've experienced strangeriness, the stressed anger. I think sometimes mamas feel this maybe more than dads, because the mom is dealing with the whole schedule, right? There's bills to pay, and there's laundry, and there's food, and there's shopping to be done, and this kid has these events, and this kid has these events, so there's school events, and sport events, and church events, and sleepover events, and all this, and then there's your work stuff piling in on you. You got all these different things, and all of a sudden it gets too much, and mama's like, stop it, everybody, leave me alone. I just need some space. There's too much going on. I need to breathe. Like, back off, right? You probably don't say it quite that way, but maybe. Some of you maybe feel the embangriness at times, that embarrassed anger. Like, isn't it weird how we humans love to laugh at one another, at things that should not really be laughable? I mean, this was the entire premise behind America's Funniest Videos, or for the younger generations, the fail armies on YouTube. We love watching other people have embarrassing mistakes, because at least for a brief moment, we realize my life is really not as bad as I was thinking it was. Like, it could be much worse. I could be that person. But you know, if you're in a space and you do something and it's kind of embarrassing, like maybe you're walking across the room and you stub your toe, you trip, and something, you fall, and it's humorous to the other people, but you're not finding any humor in it. You're like, who moved the furniture? Who put these things in the way? That hurt. I'm mad. Oh, you pick up, like, the rage monster comes out. Like, you have some embarrassed angriness. Or maybe you felt tangry before. That tired anger. I'm seeing a lot of heads nod. Like, some of you all know, like, there's a certain threshold where it's like, man, if we don't meet the bedtime for that individual in the family, like, it's bad. Well, last Sunday, this was me. Yeah, I said last Sunday. Easter afternoon for the preacher. We had a great weekend here. Man, it was so exciting. baptizing over 30 people, seeing so many new faces, seeing God at work, so encouraging. I loved worshiping with you all. It was a fantastic weekend. It was a long weekend, so I was tired, and Fitz's family got home, had lunch, and then I laid down for my usual Sunday afternoon preacher nap. At that time, there may have been something that happened in the Fitz home, which may have caused some slight damage to a piece of furniture that may have been avoided if one of the kids had maybe listened to what may have been said about don't do that thing today in that place in that way. And that may have created a little bit of chaos in the home that may have awakened me just about 5 minutes into my nap. And if you've ever been awakened just 5 minutes into your sleep, you know, like that's a, like your body's just not quite right in that moment. And I may have reacted with total pleasantness and I was so kind and it was, no, I may have reacted with a bit of sourness and grumpiness in that moment. And so I took some time, I went and I was able to process. After my initial eruption, I was able to process a little bit. And that's when I realized that God in his sovereign goodness was actually gifting me an Easter afternoon gift of an illustration for this week's sermon. I thought, oh, God, that's so kind of you. You're such a good, gracious God. Now it's all right. My world is at peace. This is great. In all reality, I did go back to the other individual and I apologized for my sourness and the part that I needed to own in the situation. Peace was restored. Relationship was mended. All is good in the Fitz home. Now, on a side note, I hope you see that our physical bodies and our spiritual, emotional, relational selves are not separate categories. Like, we don't deal with physical over here and spiritual over there. In fact, it's not like biology and theology are separate entities. In fact, what's going on with our physical body impacts all the others. If your sleep is off, it's going to affect your spirituality, your relationships, your emotion. If your diet is off, it's going to impact those things. If your exercise is off, it's going to impact those things. This is why stewarding our bodies well is actually a spiritual endeavor. This is why getting sleep is actually sometimes a spiritual thing. This is why getting a Sunday afternoon nap might be the most spiritual thing you could do today. Guys, you're welcome. But we really do need to remember that these things all play together. But let's dig just a little deeper. Maybe you've heard that you have an anger problem. This was me when I was younger. I mean, family of origin. I grew up. That's what I learned. It was learned behavior. And so when things went wrong, I got mad. And the worse they were, the madder I got, the angrier I got, the louder I got, and the more I yelled. And that always solved every problem that ever came. No, it was usually only made it worse. I don't think I've ever said or done anything out of anger that was ever helpful, that I did not later regret to some degree. You know, the more I've been able to learn and process over the years, what I've learned was, if you've heard it said that you have an anger problem, no, anger's an indicator of another problem. You don't have an anger problem. You have something else going on under the hood. The early church leader, Augustine, said this. He said, anger is like smoke from a fire. Smoke from a fire. You don't try to put out the smoke when you see the smoke. You try to extinguish the fire. So if anger is a smoke, let it point you to what's burning. Follow the smoke to the fire, and you got to deal with the fire. That's what we got to process. What's burning underneath? And sometimes smoke is a smoke screen, right? We can hide behind the smoke. I think that's the way a lot of us operate. It's kind of like addiction. Like, addiction is problematic, but rarely is addiction the actual issue. It's usually an indicator of something else going on under the hood. Insecurity, insufficiency, inadequacy, all those kinds of feelings, brokenness and woundedness, and you're trying to fix those issues. The addiction's a problem, but it always points to something deeper. Anger's the same way. So when the smoke of anger is there, process. Allow yourself to explore what's actually burning underneath. What is the burning issue? Maybe what you've got is not an anger problem. Maybe you've got a shame problem. That maybe there's something you've done and you know it's wrong and you feel the guilt and the shame, but you've allowed that guilt and shame to turn into you. Instead of acknowledging you've done something wrong, you feel that you are wrong at your core. And so whenever that issue comes up, anger shows up to hide those feelings of shame. Maybe it's that you've got a hurt problem, that there's a wound. And I think this is especially for the men. Not that women don't feel this too, but I think the message that a lot of men have heard, especially in older generations, is that real men don't get sad. They don't cry. They don't show tears. So instead of showing sadness, we replace it with a smokescreen of madness. And we get mad. When the reality is we're hurt. I mean, this has been me over the years. I've had to learn this, that when something happens in the home, if my wife says something and I misinterpret it and it wounds me, my tendency is not to show sadness. It's to get angry. And to cover up my sadness. Maybe your issue is a fear issue. That always behind anger, I think all these things are a fear issue in some way, shape, or form. That there's a fear. And you have the fight or flight. Some of us, we get angry in the fight way. Like, my anger is going to come out like, whoa, it's like a roaring bear. Some of you, your anger is a silent anger. You're like the turtle who goes into the shell and you just hide and cut off the world around you. And that's really no better. So maybe there's a fear problem. Maybe it's a pride problem, that you feel disrespected, that this thing shouldn't be happening to you. Sometimes I like to joke about driving on certain roads in the Ville and how other people drive poorly on those roads. Some of you are with me on that. Some of you might be the poor driver. I don't know. If so, grace upon you. I love you anyway. Just stay in the right lane. yes, my sin of speed. So, you know, when that happens, when somebody cuts you off in traffic, and are you really angry that you are now like one car length removed from where you otherwise would be? No. No, oftentimes it's our pride that tells us that our agenda, the place we got to be, that us in general, like, we are more important than you. You should get out of my way because I'm more important than you. My agenda is more important than you. Where I got to be, my destination, it matters more than yours. It's a pride issue. And maybe it's combined with a fear issue. Maybe that person's driving erratically. You're afraid they're going to hurt you or the passengers in your car. They might hurt somebody else on the road. Like, that's legit. But, you know, the anger is really smoking something else, burning underneath. I think back to that time in the garbage disposal incident. In all honesty, I did not process well at the time. But if I were to look back now and process, I'd say I was probably feeling some sadness that I was not being able to hang out with the family on a fun family afternoon. That I was probably feeling some disrespect that somebody else had broken something and I was stuck fixing it and I was missing out. I was probably feeling some loneliness that I was alone in that moment and missing the family. And, you know, it's not wrong to feel sad, lonely, even disrespected. But it is never okay to lash out against others because of what we're feeling. See, anger is not a sin, but we got to be really careful, church, that we don't sin because of our anger. Well, like, if we don't process the anger and let it point us to the fire and deal with that, and we just let anger have its way, then that's the fire that burns, and it burns everybody, and everybody's scorched at the end of it. So while it's not a problem to feel anger, choosing to stay in anger, choosing not to process our anger will lead us to problems, will lead us to sin every single time, because that's when we wound others. And that's why Jesus told us. He said, therefore, if you're offering your gift to the altar and you remember that your brother or sister in faith has something against you, whether you've angered them, they've angered you, whatever it is, doesn't really matter. There's a rift between you. Leave the gift and go. Go to the other person. Next slide. Go and be reconciled to them. Then come back and offer your gift. Settle matters quickly with your adversary. Go be reconciled and settle the matter. This is what the Apostle Paul was saying to the church at Ephesus. He wrote to the Ephesians, inspired by the Holy Spirit, he said this, in your anger, don't sin. Don't let the sun go down while you're still angry. And don't give the devil a foothold. Now, some of you have heard this, and you've heard this in the context of your marriage. Well, we got to resolve the issues before the sun goes down. Friends, I don't know about you, but for all you married people, here in the Fitz home, some of our best fights don't start until hours after the sun's gone down, until we're already in bed. Like, that's sometimes the wind's like, hey, boom. Remember that thing you said earlier today? Oh-hoo. And then we're tangry, like, we're already tired, so we just add more anger to that. Like, What this phrase actually means in the Greek is keep short accounts. Keep short accounts. It's an accountant who says, that debt is forgiven. Like, I'm going to forgive that. And as I forget that, we erase it from the books. That thing you said earlier today, if we've moved beyond that and it's not that big of a deal, why bring it back up now? And we certainly don't go back into the history books. No, we keep short accounts. We erase those things. And what Jen and I have found, and really I was the culprit on, like, we got to stay up and deal with this until it's resolved. That never went well. Jen goes to bed earlier. She needs more sleep. All I did was make a tangry woman even tangrier. It did not help the situation. And that's not to poke at my wife. That's to say I was misinterpreting scripture and handling it wrong. What we've learned to say is this issue, even if it might be somewhat significant in the moment, does not even compare to the amount of faith and love and commitment we have built up in our marriage. Our marriage is so much stronger and more than this little issue. So while this thing might not be okay, we are okay, we'll be okay. Let's get some sleep. Let's get some food. Let's talk about it at another time, at a better time. And similarly, this phrase, don't give the devil a foothold. We could actually translate that a little bit better from the Greek. If don't let the devil become your roommate. Don't give him a key and allow him to take up residency in your life. I mean, that's really what the context is there. It's like you've handed the devil a key and said, hey, why don't you move in with me? Why don't you take up residency in my heart? And I don't think we got to explain that too much for all of us to know that would be a terrible place to be. Like, we don't want to just do that in relationships and not just do that with anger. Like, there's nowhere where we should say, hey, Satan, go ahead and have some space here. I won't even charge you rent. Like, that's not a wise thing to do. So, friend, when anger arises, we should ask ourselves, why? What am I actually feeling? I see the smoke. What's the fire that's burning? We should hit pause. We should process. And we should pray. We should pray. And then if we need to, we should go have a conversation with another. You know, he says, Don't sin in your anger. It's not a sin to be angry, but when you are angry, be careful that you don't sin. Don't harm others with words or actions. Don't bottle it up with bitterness and resentment and ruin the relationship. Don't do or say things you will later regret, which is almost always the case when you speak in anger. And if that's already happened, go and make it right. Go reconcile and keep short accounts. And definitely, it's not okay to blame others for the poor decisions or the hurtful actions that might come from us when we are angry. You know, Bruce Banner is a good example of this. This is a picture of Bruce Banner. It's either Bruce Banner or it's our elder Jeff Imley when he was slightly younger. I'm not sure which. Those of you who know Jeff, you know what I'm talking about. But this is Bruce, the scientist. And you know Bruce's famous statement. He said, don't make me mad. Why? Because you won't like me when I'm mad. And why wouldn't we like him when he's mad? Because he turns a bit hulkish, doesn't he? He gets pretty angry, pretty mean. But hey, Bruce, do me a favor and don't put that on me. Don't blame me for your lack of self-control, for your inability or unwillingness to process the fire burning within. See, other people can't really make us feel anything. They can stir us up and they can shake us up. They can rattle our cage, but it's up to us how we receive that. It's up to us what we do with that. And it's up to us what we feel. Now, our feelings are legitimate, but our feelings should point us to something deeper within us. So even though somebody else is doing and saying things, it's up to us to process that. It's up to us to guard ourselves. And that doesn't mean we should just let people run roughshod over us. No. We can guard ourselves. We can create some space from toxic people, but we got to own the fire that burns inside, because whatever other people do really just reveals the fire that's already burning within. The smoke that comes out is revealed from the fire that's within. And this is incredibly convicting for me, because when things happen and I get angry, my tendency over the years has been to blame the situation, to blame the circumstance, to blame anyone and anything except, guess who? Me. But the reality is, I don't have the freedom to do that. I've learned that I need to shift from an accept mentality to an accept mentality. What I mean is I got to shift from accepting myself. It's everybody else except me. And I need to take acceptance of my part in the situation. Instead of exempting myself from blame, I need to accept the blame for my actions, my attitude, my reactions. I need to accept my part, and then I need to reconcile. I might need to ask forgiveness. I might need to extend forgiveness. But I got to accept what's mine to blame. Now, what amazes me about Jesus is that Jesus is the only person ever who had legitimacy to take the accept stance. He was the only one who ever could say, this sin issue is everyone else's fault except his. But what did Jesus do for us? He didn't exempt himself. Instead of accepting, he accepted. He accepted the blame. He accepted the pain. He accepted the weight of sin. He accepted the consequence. He accepted the death. He accepted the brutality. He accepted the separation from the Father. He accepted the cross and all that came with it, even though it was not his to accept. So why did he do it? Well, because God is for you and not against you. Because Jesus loves you so much that he would accept all the negative and painful consequence that was not his, so that he could exempt you and me from the consequence that is ours, that is what we deserve. He did that so that you and I could be set free from the bondage of things like anger and its destructive force in our lives. He did that so that we could walk closely with him forever. So friend, when anger shows up in your life, and it's the indicator on the dashboard, I hope that you will respond as Jesus did. I hope that you'll walk in the way of Jesus. That you will actually accept your part of it. That you will apologize and offer forgiveness as needed. That you will pause, that you'll process, that you'll pray, and that you'll reconcile. That you'll choose love. Let's pray. But God, we thank you. Jesus, we thank you that though you were totally exempt from the blame of sin, you accepted all the worst punishment for it so we wouldn't have to. God, I pray that as your people, we would be people who deal rightly with our anger, people who are slow to anger and quick to listen and quick to forgive and quick to apologize and quick to process. And when we mess up, that we would be people who are quick to reconcile. And Father, for any who are new, for any who are listening in for maybe the first time, for any who have never yet accepted, I pray that not only would they accept the part they need to accept in the sin blame, but even more, that they would accept you as the only one who can rescue them. That they would accept you as their rescuing king, choosing to follow you and follow your ways, knowing you are for them and not against them, knowing your ways are so much higher and better than our own. God, may we all choose your way, Jesus. May we all choose the way of love. We thank you and we praise you. We pray it in your name, Jesus. Amen.